Book Friends Forever, Episode 3. Hi, I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lynn.
And we're Book Friends Forever. Welcome to Episode 3. If you haven't listened to the first two episodes, we'd recommend going back to listen to them, especially the first one, because it serves as a nice introduction to who we are. But the short of it is that we're childhood friends who bonded over our love of books, and now I work as a children's book editor.
And I'm a children's book author and illustrator. This podcast is our way of staying in touch, sharing about our lives, and giving some publishing insights along the way. Each week, we'll catch up on the previous week, take a trip down memory lane, talk about what's on our minds, and end with something that we're grateful for.
So I think we always start by asking each other how we're doing. So Grace, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I just finished doing a Mouse Scouts book club meeting with my daughter.
Cute.
So I actually read her the Mouse Scouts books. They're by Sarah Dillard. I read them to her when she was really young, but she didn't remember them. So she picked them up again recently. Now she's 6, and she picked them up again, and she got so into it, and so much into it that she wanted to like try to start her own kind of scout troop. So I invited a couple friends over, and now they come over every week, and we have a Mouse Scout book club. It's so cute. We like have mouse-themed food, and we do little projects around the book, and we read 3 chapters of the book together. It's really, really fun. And so I hope.
So you're doing this every week?
Every week, yep.
It's nice. Well, I love seeing some of the photos on Facebook.
I'm curious what we're going to do when we run out of Mouse Scout books. I'll be like, Sarah, write more, faster.
I'm sure you could transition to a new series.
I know. I'm trying to think what we could do next. I'm thinking we might go to The Sprout Street Neighbors by Anna Alter. But we still have 3 more books to go for with the Mouse Scouts. So we'll get there when we get there. So how are things going with you?
They're good. Work has been really busy because we're doing performance reviews right now. We usually do them at the end of the year, but this year they moved it to February. So that always takes up some time.
So are you being reviewed or are you reviewing others?
So both. So I get my performance review with my manager, who's Megan Tingley, our publisher, and I review all of my direct reports. So this year I have 4 reviews. So I did one last week. And I have 2 this week and then 1 next week. So I try to spread them out so they're not all at the same time. But it's, you know, and I want to do a good job. And as part of our review process, we actually try to talk to other people in other departments who work with our colleagues so that we can, you know, get a more well-rounded view of how they're doing. Because, you know.
So have you ever had to give a bad review?
Not personally. Thankfully, that I can recall. I feel like all of my reviews have been positive. You know, we always try to include constructive feedback as well. And, you know, I usually at the end say, these are 3 things you can work on. And it could be things that they need to improve on or just 3 kind of opportunities to work on. So it depends.
What was the worst review you've ever gotten?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't gotten any terrible reviews either. But I do think, as previously discussed in episode 1, I do feel like my responsiveness to email could be improved. And in general communications, I've definitely had agents complain to my manager in the past about my slow or lack of responsiveness. Mm. So, you know, it's definitely something that my manager, whoever that, you know, I've had several managers over the years, but they've been aware of, but they also understand this job and how thin we're pulled in every direction. So, you know, I think that overall, I think I do a good job, but we all need to improve.
And that's one of your New Year's resolutions is to improve. So that's good.
Yes. And I've done okay, but I've definitely could still use improving, but, you know, anyway, we're all works in progress.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, so let's transition to our next segment, which is a trip down memory lane. So last week we talked a little bit about, I mentioned actually the Kindling Words retreat, which actually we attended together for the first time. I think it was 15 years ago. But
oh,
Grace,
wow.
Do you remember when we went to Kindling Words?
I do. Now, there's 2 memories of Kindling Words that are really, really poignant to me, all right? The first memory is Kindling Words was when I took out my draft of The Year of the Dog. And I think that was the first time I showed it to you. And I remember
yes,
being like, oh, we had never worked together before. And I had published a handful of picture books at that point. And you were saying how you probably couldn't find a place for me in the picture book list. But if I wrote something older, maybe we could work on something together. And I remember thinking, well, I have something older I've been working on. And I remember like taking it out like, I don't know, you could maybe look at this. And that turned into The Year of the Dog, which it's all fate, right?
Yeah. I remember, so back then, and let me explain a little bit more what Kindling Words is, but it's basically a children's book professionals retreat, and they have three strands, an author strand, an illustrator strand, and an editor strand. And it's only for published authors and illustrators and editors, not published editors, but editors who, you know, are working as editors. And it's the only retreat that I've ever discovered that editors can attend as attendees and not to work. So I was, I found out about it, I think originally on Harold Underdown's blog, The Purple Crayon. And I remember, I think I emailed it to Grace because Grace worked with Harold, and I said, hey, have you heard of this? Do you want to go? So back then it took place at Lake George, and it was this very kind of bare bones community. I don't know.
It was kind of like a Cub
like
Scout
dorms, kind of.
Place.
Yeah. So I remember that we shared a room, and I don't even remember if we had a private bathroom, but I just remember it was like very sparse,
very
Spartan.
Yeah. And I remember the second really poignant memory that I'm curious if you remember this. Kindling Words has this bonfire where you throw in your wish and your wish burns up on paper, and then hopefully your wish will come true because it's gone out into the sky and into the world. And I remember that year we were getting ready to throw our wish into the bonfire, and you were writing down, you said, I wish to edit a Newbery winner or a Caldecott winner. And then you start and you start laughing. And then I laughed because you told me that. And then I said, and then I wrote, I wish to make a book that is a Newbery or a Caldecott winner. And I remember we were laughing so hard, right? And I remember writing that down. And then I remember looking around really quickly because I was really scared somebody else would hear me say that. And I was like, I thought if anybody heard me, they'd be like, who does she think she is? Because, you know, it was just like a silly moment between the two of us. But nobody was there, and I was thinking, and I remember throwing that into the fire and saying,
oh my
like,
gosh,
remember,
I don't.
You don't remember that? I remember that so.
But it sounds like us.
You know? And I just remember it was like this, we were like giggling, hilarious, like giggling out of control, like, ah! Fear, like after giggling, I remember that fear of like, oh, did anybody hear me say that? Like, oh no.
Aww.
And then yet still afterwards, still throwing it into the fire. So I thought that was, so looking back, it's pretty, I don't know what the word is. Interesting,
it's,
magical.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great. I mean, I think we're good at making goals and aspirations and dreams, no matter how out of reach they seem. And I do feel like if you put something out in the universe, there's more of a chance of it coming true than if you don't.
I know.
Because if you put it on the universe, then you're working towards that. I mean, I'm all about goal setting. My parents taught me to do that, and I always talk about how beneficial it is. So
yeah.
Anyway, dreams do come true.
I think that's what it is. The other podcast that I'm on, the Kid Lit Women, I always end those interviews with like, what's your biggest publishing dream? And sometimes people are like embarrassed to say it. And I'm like, no, say it. Because mm-hmm. I do kind of feel like sometimes there's power just in admitting that you have that dream, you know?
Totally. I agree. Well, going back to when you first gave me your first draft of Year of the Dog. So I remember sitting in that little dorm room, and you hadn't told me, like, so I had said, oh, you know, if you ever wrote a novel, I could try to publish it. And you said, oh, I'm working on something, but you never told me what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
And then you handed me the draft, and I remember sitting there and gradually realizing that you were writing about your childhood, and you were writing about our childhood friendship. And it was so delightful. I just remember laughing, but I loved it, and You know, I remember in that early draft, my, you know, you kept my name Alvina, so it was very interesting reading a novel inspired,
with your own name.
with my name in it. And I remember the first night we broke out into critique groups, and you had them read that draft. And I remember Metallie Perkins was in that group.
I remember and that, too.
Yeah, and I think it was Metallie Perkins that gave... I'm not positive, but I... Because it was a very, very short manuscript, mm-hmm. and it didn't have much narrative. It didn't really have a narrative arc at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think it might have been Metallie, or it was just basically in that discussion group that you got the idea of maybe patterning it around a year. And so that really gave it its shape.
Yeah.
So that, I'm very thankful to Kindling Words now for
yeah.
for that book and for your Newbery Honor and your Kellogg Honor.
I know. I remember Metallie was so smart. I remember, you know, because I was such a newbie at writing or trying to write something longer. And I remember she was like, I don't remember her saying the year thing, though I bet you she did because she was so smart. But I do remember her saying, you know, you don't have to say Alvina exclaimed or Alvina joked. You could just say said. That works better because that way that way they can just follow the conversation. She's like, you know, said is not a bad word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's true. And that is something that a lot of kind of amateur or, you know, writers do when they first start out is they kind of overuse all those dialogue tags.
I know. That's because we're taught that in school, yeah, you know.
I know. It's like for lively writing and put in all those adverbs.
I know.
Don't actually do that. Okay. Well, so Kindling Words now is, it's really grown. So back then when I started going, it was, you know, I feel like maybe there were four or five editors at the most. And now this past year there were, I think 15 around there. And it's in Burlington or Essex, Vermont at a beautiful, culinary school, hotel, spa. So it has a very different feel, but it has it's still just very homey, and I really get a lot out of it. So I actually joined the board last year.
Nice.
Yeah, so now I'm going to try to go every year.
Yay.
And I really like it.
Oh, then
so maybe you should come back.
Then maybe I should come back.
Well, you went last year, yeah. But I missed it. But you should come back as an attendee.
Yeah, maybe I will.
We can all go together. Okay. All right, so we're going to bring the mood down a little bit, I think. We're going to transition to our next segment, What's on Our Minds? So, Grace, I know there's something that's been on your mind. Tell us about it.
So, this has been on my mind really a lot lately. Last week, I found out that in a yearbook I edited 28 years ago, there was not one, but two photos of students in blackface. And I was so horrified to have this revealed to me. And I didn't know what to do other than to say, I'm so sorry. I'm just horrified that I let that happen when I was, I think I must have been like 17 years old.
Right. I mean, and I guess for some context, I mean, right now it's... blackface is in the news because of the governor of Virginia?
Mm-hmm.
In his med school yearbook had a photo of what actually people said at first was him, and that at first he said sorry, and then like he then said, no, that wasn't me, but I did dress in blackface this other time. It was very bizarre.
Yeah,
I mean, that's... I really, when I saw you post about that on Facebook, I did wonder if I looked in my high school yearbook if I would see any photos.
I just thought, because when you said that, my husband actually, he went through his high school photo of high school yearbook, and he found two pictures of blackface in his high school yearbook, too. And he's in Canada. He's from Canada, so... It was a pretty big problem or something that a lot of communities were not sensitive to.
I don't think people, and that's the thing, it's back then, I mean, I'm sure many people knew it was wrong, but I think many people just didn't cross their minds. But I also do wonder, because in California, my high school was actually pretty diverse, and, you know, I think it was back then maybe 10%. black in terms of the student population. So I wonder, I wouldn't be surprised if there weren't photos because of that. But I guess I also wouldn't be surprised if there were because of time period. I was actually, all of this reminded me of high school because back in high school, one of my friends loved this movie called Soul Man. Do you remember that movie?
Kind of.
It had...
Did he pretend to be black so he could get into Harvard or something like that?
Yes, yes. It was, I think it's C. Thomas Howell played a guy who's, yeah, trying to get into Harvard Med School, I think. And he took, in the movie, he took, like, he overdosed on tanning pills so that he would look black. I don't know. So I watched that movie back then. I mean, it was, I think it was 1986. So the fact that there was a movie about that, I mean, to me, speaks to what was going on in the culture during that time. And I just don't feel like people fully realized that
yeah.
it was wrong.
And
you know, but it's not to make
I guess that's what's so horrible about it. Like, you know, the truth is I've been racking my head trying to remember putting these photos in it, and I really actually do not even remember. Like, I had no memory of these photos at all. I had no memories of putting them in, but I must have done it, right? Because I was the editor. And then I'm trying to think, you know, what was I thinking at the time? And, you know, it's, I know one picture was a candid picture, and it was a person in blackface in the background. And I'm pretty sure I just put that candid in because the person in the foreground was somebody that I knew, and I liked him, and I was like, oh, I'll put him in. And I probably did not even register the blackface person in the background, which, I mean, just shows you how, like, insidious, like, unconscious racism is, you know, like, you don't even, it's like, you just see it and you didn't, doesn't even affect you. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just terrible. But the other one was actually a portrait. You know, in high school, you have those high school portraits. And so what we had was, we had a professional photographer that came in and took your portrait on portrait day. And then they just sent us all, everybody's portrait. And we just kind of like put them all in. Like it was, I probably did see it. No, but you know, it's just kind of like a rote thing. Like, okay, you match the name and the person and you go in. So, but this person had on picture day had, you know, rubbed the black shoe polish on and came in to come in specifically in blackface, you know, and it's so horrifying to think about all the layers that had to go through, like, and how we were all so complicit. Like, I'm thinking, like, okay, not only did he decide to do this himself, his parents must have seen him rub the shoe polish on his face, you know, the teachers must have seen him walking into the school, you know, like, all the kids were probably tittering in the hallway, you know, about this, thinking of some big joke. The professional photographers took the photo anyway and sent it to us without even thinking about it. And then I put it in just because, you know, like, because I was either too asleep at the wheel, or honestly, more likely, I probably just felt like he was one of the cool kids, and who am I to decide what he wants in the picture? Yeah. And, like, you know, and if I were to say anything, they'd probably say something bad about me, and I didn't want them to say anything bad about me. Probably is more likely happened. I wish I could say I knew, but I don't. But it just shows how easy it is to be complicit in these things, and it's
right. Yeah, because it still goes on today. That's, you know, I mean, I feel like it's, you know, we talk about, like, oh, how much times have changed, but, you know, even I remember there was that actress who dressed up like a character from Orange is the New Black, and she did, you know, tanning, like, you know, she's white, and she dressed up as a black character, and, you know, that was so recent. So, yeah, I mean, I guess the positive is that it's become more, people are talking about it, but it is a little,
I think we all knew it was bad, right? But I think it's only become, like, I think I knew there was something wrong with it back then. This is not to excuse it. It was a horrible thing. But I think that I knew there was something wrong with it, but I didn't know how wrong it was until now as an adult, you know? Right. I think when I probably saw it and like, oh, that seems a little weird, but because I was so insecure, I just let it slide. But it's only now, knowing the history of blackface and knowing what that means and all those things, that I realized, oh, that's not just weird and awkward and uncomfortable. It's like really, really bad.
Let's hope that times change more quickly.
Yeah.
That we can go in the right direction.
I know.
But I thought that was... So did one of your classmates tell you that?
Yeah. So apparently, like, I missed the whole thing, but apparently she found it and she posted it on her Facebook page and there was a huge blow up because obviously she's more connected to people in high school than I am. And then it was revealed that I was the editor. And then she took the whole post down, and then she direct messaged me and told me what happened, and she apologized to me, and I was like, don't apologize to me. like it's my fault. Like, whatever people said, you know, I deserve it because I made a bad mistake, a mistake that there's consequences for, you know? So
were they identified, and did they apologize or say anything?
I have no idea. So that's why I posted it on my, I didn't want to post the photos on, honestly, because I don't have the photos. But I posted it on my Facebook page because I didn't want people to feel like I was trying to, you know, hide my responsibility. I mean, I feel like that's even worse. I mean, I feel like I should at least admit that I was complicit, right? Mm-hmm. And, neither of the people who were in blackface have commented on my Facebook post. But then I don't even know if I'm Facebook friends with them. Honestly, right. High school was like so traumatic for me. That's one of the reasons why I don't write YA. It was just so traumatic for me that like I've blocked out so much of it. And I've also just like, I don't really have that many high school friends even on Facebook because I just, you know, I don't, like I said, I don't even want to relive those years fictionally, which is so, like, I don't even like to be reminded of them, like, now, because they were just so traumatic. Like, after you left, it was all over for me. Because you left in junior high.
I left right before eighth grade, yeah.
Yes, and then it went all downhill for me.
Well,
I'm laughing
sorry,
about it, but it was very tragic.
You survived. You got.
But
you
I survived,
made
and
it
made me a stronger person, hopefully.
All right. Well, then, to end on a more positive note, let's switch over to our final segment, what we're grateful for this week. Grace, what are you grateful for?
Let's go with you first. You, because I feel like I need a little.
I know. You need to breathe. Okay.
Breathe before I say what's
what. What am I grateful for this week? I am grateful... You know, this is going to be silly, but I'm grateful for my cat. I have my cat Venus, who is just my companion, and she's getting older. I don't actually know how old she is, but I think she's maybe 15 or 16. And about 2 years ago, I thought maybe she didn't have too much longer to this world, but then she recovered. So I'm just grateful for every, you know, additional day or year or month or whatever I have with her, so... I'm grateful to my cat. What are you grateful
for? I was trying to think about exactly what, and I couldn't really put it in words, but so I've been running recently, right? And even when it's really cold, I've been running. And the other day I was running and I saw, and as I was running, I saw this, it's cold, it's gray, and it's black and white. And then I saw this bright red cardinal in the trees. And it was just so beautiful. It just sat there looking at me, right? I stopped running and I looked at it. And it sat there so long that I could take out my phone. I took a photo and I got stepped closer and closer. Let me take a photo. And I don't know, it just felt like so magical.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that was so cool. And then when it finally flew away, it just felt like this really great moment. So I'm not really sure exactly what you would call that, but I was really grateful for that kind of like magical moment of seeing something beautiful.
There is a word. There is a Japanese word for that, and I'm blanking on what it is. But it's kind of it's a word that means it's kind of like the beauty in what doesn't last in a way. So you can describe cherry blossoms that way. And I wish Katrina Gold Saito, who wrote the book The Sound of Silence, she introduced me to this other phrase that is this meaning. And if I'll look it up in the next episode, I'll mention the word. But yeah, I feel like that's kind of what it is. It's like that fleeting beauty.
Yes, exactly. It's like the fleeting beauty, and so grateful that I got to see that fleeting beauty, and somehow it's even more beautiful because it was so fleeting. You know, it's such I mean, that's what it was, so.
Oh, it's something like mono no aware, something like that. I'm probably saying it wrong, so I'll look it up.
There's a book that I bought, and I can't remember, I just bought it, and it's about books, it's about words that there's that are untranslatable.
I love that book called? I love that.
Yeah, I love the idea, and I love the illustrations are really beautiful. I'm not quite sure if it's like supposed to be for adults or for kids, so I keep hoping. I tried to get my daughter interested, and it was not as kid-friendly as I would want it to be, so I'm hoping someday somebody else does a book that's more kid-friendly, but the same idea, like untranslatable words.
Right. Why don't you do it?
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
If you publish it. That could be our project for 2029.
2028. It has to be 2028. Yes. Okay. Deal. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us. I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lynn.
Have a great week.
And keep reading.
Bye.